This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Analysts say Iranian-backed proxies in the region could join the war against Israel. VOA correspondent Henry Ridgewell reports.
Iran is a major supporter of Hamas, and there are fears that the attack could spiral into a broader conflict in the region.
If Israel is going to mount a ground invasion of Gaza, I think there is real concern that these other groups that have gotten Iranian support and that share Iran's goals and share Iran's animosity toward Israel, that they might get involved as well.
That includes Hezbollah, a powerful militant group based in Lebanon and backed by Iran. Israeli forces have exchanged sporadic rocket fire with Hezbollah fighters in recent days. Syria said Thursday that Israeli missiles had targeted airports in Damascus and Aleppo, damaging their runways. Israel did not comment, but has previously accused Syria of facilitating arms shipments from Iran to militant groups in the region. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
Under pressure from both Democrats and Republicans in the U.S. Congress to block Iran from accessing $6 billion in oil revenues made available as part of a recent prisoner exchange deal, the administration of President Joe Biden signaled Thursday it is considering refreezing the funds. The $6 billion represents the proceeds of oil sales and had been held in a South Korean bank until recently when it was transferred to a bank in Qatar. Under the agreement the Biden administration struck with Iran, the money was only to be used for the purchase of humanitarian supplies. The money would not go directly to the Iranian government, but instead would be paid directly to pre-approved lenders, vendors of food, agricultural, and medical supplies, who would then deliver the goods to Iran. This is VOA News. However, many U.S. lawmakers argued that it would free up money for Iran to spend on other things, such as support for terrorist organizations such as Hamas and Hezbollah. Several administration officials weighed in on the topic less than a week after Iranian-backed Hamas staged a violent attack on Israel. After meeting with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, relatives of American citizens missing or held captive called for the immediate release of the hostages and those missing in action on Thursday. Here is Abby Ahn, relative of five missing Israelis, at a news conference in Tel Aviv on Thursday.
Hearing our stories makes this issue human. This is a human issue. These are civilians that are missing and have been captured.
The White House National Security spokesman says the number of U.S. citizens confirmed dead in the Hamas attack in Israel over the weekend had risen to 27, with 14 more still unaccounted for. The White House confirmed the U.S. State Department will begin offering charter flights to Europe to help Americans leave Israel. The effort to choose the next speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives continues. Congressman Steve Scalise of the southern U.S. state of Louisiana has ended his bid to become House Speaker after failing to secure the votes to win the gavel. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer has more.
Republican Steve Scalise told his GOP colleagues at a closed-door meeting that he is no longer running for Speaker of the House. He had been furiously working to secure votes after being nominated by a majority of his colleagues, but after hours of private meetings over 2 days and late into the evening on Capitol Hill, it was clear lawmakers were not budging from their refusal to support him. Scalise was trying to peel off more than 100 votes, mostly from those who backed his chief rival, Jim Jordan, favored by hardline liners who announced he was no longer in the running and had tossed his vote to Scalise. But many hardliners are taking their cues from Donald Trump and have dug in for a prolonged fight. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Threats are being issued from North Korea after the arrival of U.S. naval ships in South Korea. VOA's Alexis Strope has more.
North Korea is lashing out at the arrival of a U.S. aircraft carrier battle group in South Korea, calling it a provocation and again raising the specter of using nuclear weapons to defend itself. The North's state media issued that threat Friday, citing its escalatory nuclear doctrine. A day earlier, the USS Ronald Reagan and its battle group arrived at South Korea's southeastern port of Busan following a U.S.-South Korean-Japanese naval exercise in international waters earlier this week. Emboldened by its advancing nuclear arsenal, North Korea has increasingly issued threats to use nuclear weapons preemptively. But the North is still outgunned by U.S. and South Korean forces, and experts say it is unlikely to use its nukes first. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Friday, October 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Provisional results of the Liberian presidential elections begin rolling in.
Israel don't see anymore Hamas as an address, as a site for arrangement, ceasefires, or whatever. Israel see Hamas, according to their behavior on Saturday, as worse than ISIS.
Over 300,000 Palestinians flee their homes and are shattering in UN schools.
Ça nous a permis, avec l'autorisation du président, de rencontrer.
Touadera says Nguema assured him that members of a new transitional National Assembly and Senate, the coup leader appointed, will, in total freedom, prepare laws for a return to civilian rule.
And sanctions press for a return to constitutional rule in Gabon to be maintained despite progress made by the military junta. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In the sixth day of fighting between Israel and Hamas, and while U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Israel, Israel officials vowed to destroy Hamas in Gaza. Israel also rejected calls to allow humanitarian aid into the besieged Gaza Strip. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
In Gaza, an estimated 300,000 Palestinians have fled their homes and are sheltering in United Nations schools. There are fears of a growing humanitarian crisis as Israeli bombardment of the densely populated Gaza Strip continued. Whole neighborhoods have been flattened, and the Palestinian death toll is over 1,300, rivaling the number of Israelis killed in the Hamas terrorist onslaught that began Saturday. UN officials urged Israel to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza and to restart the flow of water and electricity to its 2.2 million citizens. Israeli officials said that won't happen until Hamas releases the 100 to 150 hostages, including dozens of foreign nationals that it was holding. Hamas has threatened to begin executing the hostages and broadcasting their deaths if the bombardment does not end. In Israel, many parents have removed apps such as TikTok from their children's phones as a precaution. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told Secretary of State Antony Blinken that Hamas's behavior on Saturday was inhuman.
Hamas has shown itself to be an enemy of civilization. The massacring of young people in an outdoor music festival, the butchering of entire families, the murder of parents in front of their children, and the murder of children in front of their parents, the burning of people alive, the beheadings, the kidnappings of a young boy, not only kidnapped, molested, hurt, attacked.
Israeli officials say they've begun a campaign to wipe out Hamas and will not stop until they succeed. Israeli analysts said Israel must completely change its conception of Hamas, which controls Gaza. Amos Yadlin is a former chief of military intelligence.
Israel don't see anymore Hamas as an address, as a site for arrangement, ceasefires, or whatever. Israel see Hamas, according to their behavior on Saturday, as worse than ISIS.
Meanwhile, Israel swore in its unity government, meant to unify the country in its war against Hamas. Linda Bradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
The Israeli military has said there's no concrete evidence of Iranian involvement in the Hamas attack from Gaza after denials issued by the Iranian Foreign Ministry. If Iran encouraged the Hamas attack to prevent the Israeli-Saudi normalization process sponsored by the U.S., tensions could rise between Israel and Iran and Tehran's Lebanese proxy Hezbollah. Dave Zdirokos, our associate professor at the U.S. National Defense University, discussed the possible scenarios with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shanawi.
Iran has encouraged Hamas to attack Israel. And, you know, Iran is the main backer of Hamas, both financially and militarily. So that issue, I don't consider them to be any question there. You know, a lot of the weapons that we've seen have either been provided by Iran and smuggled in, or they're the result of Iran's efforts to encourage local production of things. So we've seen local production of missiles and air defense missiles, rockets, things of that nature. That's a given. So I think the issue here right now is if Hezbollah enters in a big way. So far, we saw a mostly symbolic mortar fires on Sheba farms, which, of course, Hezbollah does not consider to be Israel. So, you know, they haven't done that. We've seen a few infiltration and artillery fire at military targets, but not civilian targets inside Israel today from Hezbollah in Lebanon. I think, though, that these fall under the category of demonstrations. And I think that Hezbollah is kind of wary about being sucked in to this conflict. I think Israel has probably signaled to them that there will be, you know, less restraint than Israel has shown in the past, and an overwhelming military response that Hezbollah doesn't want to see. But, you know, this is the problem with wars. They take on a life of their own, and Hezbollah and any Iranian proxy can't afford to be seen to be, you know, to be sitting on the sidelines while Hamas is in a fight with Israel. So they may find themselves drawn belatedly into a war that they might not want to be part of.
So how serious is the situation in the Middle East to stability that is a strategic goal for the U.S. foreign policy?
Oh, this is incredibly serious. I mean, look, the main tenets of U.S.-Israel policy, the two-state solution, it's either dead or it's been set back decades. So, you know, the trust needed for any future arrangements, you know, is gone. The viciousness of these attacks, which, you know, again, it has to be emphasized, you know, was targeted at civilians primarily, not military forces. There are reports of women, the reports elderly. You know, we've seen videos that were published by Hamas showing, you know, elderly people and women being taken, you know, across the border, women being manhandled, stuff like that. These images are very, very powerful, and they're going to have a resonance that is going to make it harder to reconcile these parties or just to de-escalate the conflict. Now, unfortunately, this is one of those instances, I think, where there's going to have to be a period of confrontation to sort of reestablish norms in the Israel-Hamas conflict. And unfortunately, as is generally the case, the main sufferers of this will be civilians on both sides.
Israel would never consider Hamas a partner for peace, but the Palestinian Authority can be a partner. So if there is going to be an Israeli invasion of Gaza to try to destroy Hamas, should the U.S. introduce a political initiative that empowers and helps to strengthen the Palestinian Authority so a two-state solution could be revived?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I can tell you that, you know, I have been involved in the past with training Palestinian security forces. I was actually awarded a medal by the Palestinian Authority. But in general, you know, we've seen them kind of be sidelined, you know, in the West Bank. Of course, obviously, they were overthrown by force by Hamas in Gaza. And in the West Bank, we've seen them sort of being superseded by younger, spontaneous, not affiliated with the Palestinian Authority groups that have carried out direct attack. And that indicates that there's at some level, some degree of dissatisfaction with the Palestinian Authority, which, you know, let's face it, is not the best run. I mean, you know, President Abbas is in, the 14th year of a six-year term or something like that. So there's a lot of dissatisfaction there. And I'm not sure that the Palestinian Authority, as presently constituted, is the vehicle for reconciliation.
David DeRoche, Associate Professor at the U.S. National Defense University, discussing the possible scenarios with VOA's senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shanawi. Provisional results of Liberia's presidential elections have begun rolling in as the two top candidates, President George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change and his rival Joseph Boakai of the Unity Party, are pulling votes from their strongholds. As of now, both men who believe they will secure a first-round victory would have to wait for a few days as results come in to know who will become Liberia's next president. Earlier, I reached reporter Denise Nimpson in Monrovia for an update.
On today, the National Elections Commission has released preliminary results. 392 polling places out of the 5,890 representing 6.66% of the polling places. The incumbent, Weah, has 49,410 votes, which amounts to 39.6%. And Joseph Boakai, former vice president, has 57,862 votes, amounting to 46.27% of the total votes or the percentage. And the supporters from both parties are in high spirit in terms of both parties are claiming early victory. On today, the opposition United Party had a press conference and they stated that they have won the election and they are just awaiting the National Elections Commission to come up with the final announcement that they have won the election. That anything contrary to that, they might not accept it. So the country currently, Liberians are looking up for the results to know how it will go, though the preliminary result is coming in bit and pieces because the National Elections Commission said there are constraints getting to some of the areas, and because of the packed attendance, they are doing it gradually to release the report. But according to the elections law, within 50 days, the final result should be given. And if any party or any candidate doesn't reach the 50 plus one, there will be a rerun on the second Tuesday of the next month.
The two leading candidates had strong support from their areas. And how generally have the regional affiliations and tribal politics, how may it impact this final result?
So it is actually helping at this point in time because both of the candidates are getting good numbers from their strongholds in terms of their region where they come from. Like the incumbent is from the southeast, so he's receiving the support from the southeast. The former vice president, who is the candidate of the new opposition Unity Party, also has some vote coming from his area, Lofa County, where he's leading as well, knowing that that's a stronghold in other parts of Liberia that has put him in the lead of this preliminary result that has been given as 392 of the 5,890 polling places so far.
And from what you are hearing, when might the Electoral Commission declare the final results?
So as said, the constitution election results should be given within 15 days after the conduct of the election. So the election results is expected within 15 days, and within 15 days, if none of the candidates reach the absolute majority of the 50 plus one, meaning there will be a runoff the second week of the following month, the second Tuesday, after the Constitution of Liberia.
That's reporter Denise Nimpson. She spoke with me from Monrovia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Friday, October 13th. For more African news and features, visit our website at viewafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Now, see you to come on our program, Samson Omale's Sports. The Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, and the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, say sanctions pressed for a return to constitutional rule in Gabon will be maintained despite progress made by the military junta. The top officials with CEMAC and ECAS visited Gabon Wednesday amid opposition protests. This after junta leaders appointed aides as lawmakers to prepare for the return to constitutional order. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from neighboring Cameroon.
The presence of the Central African Republic, CAR, Foster Archkanje Touadera, says he visited Gabon on Wednesday to see what progress coup leader General Brice Clotaire Oligui Nguema has made toward handing over power to civilian rule.
Ça nous a permis, avec l'autorisation du président, de rencontrer...
Touadera says Nguema assured him that members of a new transitional National Assembly and Senate, including opposition,
army officers and civil society leaders the coup leader appointed will, in total freedom, prepare laws for a return to civilian rule. Touadera says the civilian prime minister appointed by Nguema also assured the international community that Gabon is preparing a national dialogue before the military junta hands power to civilians. Touadera's remarks were carried on Gabon and CAR state television. Gabon says the process to restore stability, ensure sustainable economic development, and revise the electoral code ahead of promised elections is progressing as planned, but has yet to say when the election will take place. Touadera, who is also president of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, says he will give a report of the military junta's activities to leaders of the regional economic bloc, but sanctions to press for a return to constitutional order will remain in place. CEMAC has Cameroon, Chad, CAR, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, and Congo as members. Touadera was appointed by the 11-member Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, to mediate Gabon's transition to constitutional order. ECAS includes all the CEMAC members, as well as Angola, Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, and Sao Tome and Principe. Gilberto de Piedade Verissimo, president of the ECAS Commission, also visited Gabon on Wednesday and said he was impressed at the progress made by Nguema and will be submitting a report to ECAS leaders who may decide to lift sanctions on the military junta. The visits came amid opposition protests over Nguema's appointment Saturday of 98 members of the National Assembly and 70 senators to prepare laws for a return to constitutional order. Gabon's opposition says Jean-François Ndongo, a former government minister and close aide of ousted President Ali Bongo, should not have been appointed National Assembly president. The opposition says Ndongo was part of a dictatorial regime of Bongo whose family's iron-fisted rule lasted about 55 years when Nguema led a bloodless coup against President Ali Bongo Ondimba on August 30. Bonaventure Nzigo Mafumbi is the president of Front for Republican Equality, a Gabonese opposition party. He spoke via a messaging app from Gabon's capital, Libreville. He says Gabon opposition and civil society have filed a complaint to the Transition Constitutional Council created by the military junta. He says they are unhappy because people who may be loyal to the junta leader and close aides of the ousted regime, whose uprightness and level of patriotism are doubtful, are among the appointed lawmakers. Manfumbi says the wish of disgruntled civilians is for Dieudonné Aba Owonu, a civilian magistrate who heads the council, to render justice without interference. Gabon's opposition, however, applauds the appointment of Paulette Masombo, one of Bongo's leading rivals at the election and head of the National Union Party, as Senate President. Gabon's coup leader has so far visited Equatorial Guinea, CAR, Chad, and Congo to seek an end to international sanctions, which the Central African States says are potentially damaging to the fragile economy of the oil-producing nation. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
With a little over 2 months until the general election, Congolese President Felix Tshisekedi on Thursday said some conditions of military rule in conflict-hit eastern provinces would be eased, partly to encourage participation in the vote. Reuters reports he stopped short of cancelling the state of siege in North Kivu and Ituri provinces, despite pressure to do so from civil society groups and the opposition, who say it has done little to contain the many militias destabilizing the East since it was imposed in April 2021. In a late evening televised speech to the nation, the president said the curfew would be lifted and peaceful demonstrations permitted and a gradual easing of certain rules in the affected provinces. As he campaigned for a second term, his administration has had to deny allegations from rights groups and national allies of a crackdown on freedom of expression and political dissent. It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here's Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Douglas. We begin the sport with the draws for the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations, which was conducted on Thursday night. Host Cote d'Ivoire will play regional rivals Nigeria in Group A alongside Equatorial Guinea and Guinea-Bissau. Defending champions Senegal were pitted against Cameroon in Group C, with Guinea and Gambia completing the group in what looks like a competitive group. It was a captivating ceremony with current and former football superstars Didier Drogba, Mikel Obi, Sadio Mane, Ashraf Hakimi supporting as draw assistants for the final draw. Egypt, hunting a record-extending 8th continental crown, will face Ghana in Group B in a repeat of the 2010 final, which the Pharaohs won late on. Cape Verde and Mozambique are also in the group. Algeria, Tunisia, Mali and South Africa add further star quality to Group E in another exciting group. Elsewhere, Morocco should navigate a comfortable Group F containing DR Congo, Zambia and Tanzania. And now to some comeback sports news. Nigerian mixed martial artist Kamaru Usman will face Sweden's Kamzat Chimaev at the co-main event of the UFC 294 scheduled to take place on October 21st, 2023 at the Etihad Arena in Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates. The late substitution was announced by UFC President Dana White on the championship's social media handles on Wednesday. Usman, nicknamed the Nigerian Nightmare, was not originally part of the UFC 294 fight card. The event was billed to feature Chimaev against Brazil's Paulo Costa. Following tests conducted on the fighters ahead of the Abu Dhabi showdown, Costa was deemed ineligible to compete due to an elbow injury. In basketball news, Bangui Sporting Club closed their Group B campaign of the road to the Basketball African League with a stunning 88-87 win over host Forces Armies at Police FAP on Thursday. It was Bangui Sporting Club's second straight win in the group after starting with an unexpected 73-69 defeat to Espoir Basketball Club. The win means the Bangui-based club advanced to the West Division Elite 16 round as Group B winners, despite finishing with a similar win-loss record of FAP. And now to athletics, where Nigeria track and field runner Divine Oduduru was on Thursday handed a 6-year ban by the World Athletics Integrity Unit, AIU, for a doping violation. The AIU on its website said Oduduru, who was linked to his compatriot Blessing Okabare, was found guilty of both possession and or use or attempted use of multiple prohibited substances. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Douglas, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, October 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington, wishing you a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.